now on Racing Pulse, RSN's racing editor, Matt Stewart.
Interesting which way the Cummings camp goes, Edward Cummings goes with Jewis. There's, like all of them, there's a crossroad looming and they're just going to get through it.
For more news, opinion and selections, head to rsn.net.au.
It is time for all of the news with Matty Stewart, RSN's racing editor, who's bounced back. He's a strong constitutional person because he was on his deathbed yesterday, but he's back. And I'll tell you what's got him up.
He's back. You're exactly right. His head was bad yesterday and his back is bad today. So it's just moved down a rung.
Maybe we should get you one of those horse chiropractors.
Mate, I'm an ocean and pool dweller and I can't swim at the moment. And on land, I'm like a walrus on land. Have you seen them on those beaches?
You said it, but it's
a
very,
let's
it's
just
a
move
very
on to Bayeed.
Description. I'll tell you who's not a walrus, Bayeed. Let's have a listen to what he was able to do overnight in the Judmont. A perfect 10 from 10. We'll also hear from Jim Crowley, his jockey, and William Haggis, the trainer.
Miff Schriff has dropped the front. Miff Schriff going on here as they race down towards the final furlong and a half. Jim Crowley's hardly moving on Bayeed. Now he's asking him to pick up this leader and the response is instantaneous and Bayeed gallops past Miff Schriff and goes on inside the final furlong. That was really impressive and Jim Crowley's looking round here and this is going to be brilliant. There's no question he loves the distance and it's a perfect 10 for Bayeed in the Judmont. Wow, he's won by 6 lengths. Miff Schriff in second. Sir Busker close again with Dubai Honour.
That was an unbelievable performance. He had his knockers sort of here, saying he wasn't as good as what people say he is. But I've always known he was an unbelievably talented horse. I've ridden some nice ones, but he was just completely on another level to everything I've ever sat on before. I wasn't concerned about the trip. I wasn't concerned about the ground. I wasn't really concerned about anything, really, and I wasn't nervous. You know, maybe I should be, but no. I'm not because I just know how good he is. You know, I know if I did get in a bit of trouble, he'd get me out. He's just a very special horse, and I mean that in every word because, you know, nothing seems to faze him. A bomb could go off, he wouldn't even twitch an ear. He's just literally bomb-proof. And, you know, the second's a very, very good horse. Like I said, he came there at the 2-furlong pole. My feet was on the dashboard, and it was race over in a few strides.
It's just such an extraordinary thing to watch a horse doing that, isn't it? And that to be on him, I mean, it just must be another level.
It's actually sends the hairs up the back of your neck. It really does. I mean, the day Batash broke the record here on Deja, I thought doesn't get any better than that. But that was just something else, in my opinion.
But I think he silenced... there are not many critics. He didn't have many critics, but I think he silenced a few of those. I think he was imperious today, just like Frankel did 10 years ago.
Well, nice note for William Haggis to finish on with Frankel 10 years ago because that's the benchmark. And, you know, there's always the stories going in were what chinks were there in the armour of Bayeed. And I think now that he's stretched out to the uncharted waters of that distance range, 2,000 plus, whatever chinks there were, if there were any, were completely erased because he was just so dominant. One thing that, just watching the race again, the replay, it's Crowley almost potentially put him into a... awkward position by going inside and then staying there. And it for a while there, you're going, oh, gee, you could have made it a totally, eradicate any possibility of doubt. But
the horse was travelling that well. You have to go. I'm struggling to think of another horse that was travelling as well as what Bayeed was in a major race like that. He was literally trying to pull the horse up at the 250 mark because he was travelling that well. And Miff Schriff, who is a star in his own right, he put 6 lengths on in a twinkling. And, you know, for me, the most disappointing thing of the whole affair is the fact that there is one more run for this horse. He's won 10 from 10. It's like Frankel. He is the next Frankel. I don't know whether you can ever compare a horse to Frankel, but he is without doubt the second best horse that Europe's seen in my mind since Frankel. He's going to be retired. And there was a comment afterwards in the press from William Haggis, his trainer, who said about he's not going to continue racing on. And he basically said he can't continue on. He needs to go to stud and earn some decent money now.
It's such a shame that there's that paradox in the racing industry between the breeding requirement and the racing fans, what they want and what they hope for. And, you know, and it's also a reflection of the terrible state of prize money in England. The real money certainly can't be earned on a racetrack over there. But the same syndrome is the case here. Frankel was 14 for 14 and went to start. And so you get this, you have to really enjoy it while you can, because it's always, even at the start, it's nearly at the end with a horse like Bayeed. And I think the other frustration, there's a couple of little things that happen when you get a megastar like Black Caviar, Winx, Bayeed, is the other ones tend to run away from you, and they all ran to Deauville last week. Seeing as much as Mishriff is a seriously good horse, Inspiral was the one who you'd love to have seen him flog, because that would have really nailed it for how good he was. Because Mishriff had been missing the start and that, but I think it was probably the best we saw in him for some time. But anyway, he flogged Mishriff. I think that was a Frankel performance. I think you can now talk about him in the same breath.
It was. He was probably underwhelming at Royal Ascot, but obviously William Haggis knew what he was doing and what he had, stepping him up to the 2,000 metres, because that he was just absolutely scintillating. And there's been calls for him to go to the Arc, but they're going to resist that temptation to step him out even further, even though on that performance, so they wouldn't see which way he went unless you have a bog track there. But they're going to run in the champions and that
and round
will be
it off. It's a shame, because Frankel did the same. It's a shame in a way that, okay, if we're not going to see much of him, let's see him put pitted to the ultimate test, and that would be the Arc. You might get a heavy track, who knows. I remember Gosden took a Nable there the last time and knew she couldn't win, but he still pitted her against in it on the heavy track. And I think it's a real shame that he's retiring when he is, but it's an even greater shame that they're not prepared to aim up at the Arc. If he got beat, it wouldn't even matter. He's still worth what he's worth. So maybe if the fact that there's the Champions, if the Champion Stakes didn't exist, and I think it's a relatively new race too, Champions Day, maybe they've got the same problem as us, too many options. If the option wasn't there, then he'd run in the Arc probably, wouldn't he?
Well, that was Bayeed. So he is, without doubt, the best horse in the world. He heads the ratings, but he will absolutely. I loved it. I haven't seen it at this point in time. I saw a headline saying that the early ratings say it's the second best performance ever in Britain.
And I think Frankel.
Behind Frankel.
Yeah. One last bit on him. It was interesting. At the races, put up a poll of who's the best horse, See the Stars, Bayeed or Frankel. And I reckon a lot of the responses were a bit, because he's not going to run in the Arc. And a lot of them were saying See the Stars, because at least it was in conjunction with this debate about whether he should go to the Arc or not. And everyone's saying, well, you know what? If he was going to the Arc, we'd rate him up. But because he's not, we're going to put See the Stars up on. I did, when, oh God, what's his name with the eyebrows? Michael Canaan. When he was out here, he rode See the Stars. I asked him, I said, oh, obviously Frankel was the greatest of all time. And he goes, no, not over 2,000 metres and further. So he was very much, See the Stars would have beaten Frankel in 2,000 metres and beyond, certainly in an Arc scenario.
I'd never associated Mick Canaan with eyebrows, the huge eyebrows either.
So. Google him. He makes Dave Eustace look like look like drawn on with pencil.
Speaking of Dave Eustace, his great mate James Ferguson.
That was an inadvertent segue.
It's a nice link. Has the favourite for the Melbourne Cup after Deauville Legend's performance last night.
Deauville Legend is out after him. On the outside is Secret State. Acal is well held today. They race inside the final furlong and a half. Deauville Legend strikes the front from El Bodegon as they race inside the final 150 yards. And Danny Muscat looks across and sees he's going further clear on Deauville Legend. What a likeable horse he is. And he's going to take the great Voltager for the James Ferguson team as Secret State runs on for second. And back in third place, El Bodegon.
Very smooth, a wonderful ride from Dan. You know, he has genuinely improved from run to run to run. He hasn't had short of runs this year. You know, we felt, you know, he's come out of each race so well. You know, the team at home have done a wonderful job, and with the permission of Bonho, we've been allowed to run him here today, and I think that's teed him up very, very, very nicely for a trip down to Australia.
Yes, absolutely. And have you seen him improve physically as well at home?
Absolutely. You know, he's strengthened up with age, as they all do from 2 to 3. We're just very grateful. The team at home have done a wonderful job, and you know, we're just honoured to train such lovely horses.
What's the timetable now with him going to Australia for the Melbourne Cup?
So he'll probably go into quarantine mid-September, and aim to be in Australia beginning of October in time for the Melbourne Cup on the 1st of November. But obviously that will have to be discussed with the owner beforehand.
I'm assuming there's no chance to get a prep over in Australia. It will be straight into the Melbourne Cup.
I think I'll go straight there, but yet, like I said, yet to be decided.
So he's now the $11 favourite for the Melbourne Cup with the tab, and most outlets, even over in Europe, now have him favourite. Racing Victoria, the VRC, be absolutely wrapped. We've got horses in the form that Dover Legend is in, heading to Australia after we had no internationals last year, really, other than the Spanish Mission. So this year, we could go back to what an old Melbourne Cup looked like, where the top four or five in the market, other than Dewis, the local hope, are all internationals. And for James Ferguson, he actually ran first and third. El Bogadon, who was his first Group 1 winner last year, is also coming out to Australia and is going to be targeted at the Cox Plate.
Absolutely. And it was interesting, the interviewer asked Ferguson, you know, is it just into the Melbourne Cup or is there a prep down there? Well, of course, there is no prep. Having one run leading in. So, that's interesting. It'd be nice to see a nice balance of internationals versus Raiders, because the big Quinella from last year, they're not there. Spanish Mission's sort of half back as well. But so many expectations will be on Dewis, because she could run in the Cups, the Cox Plate, Japan Cup. She's the big horse locally now because of no incentivise and very elegant to be pitted against the international.
And it was interesting, I'm not sure, because you're a bit crook yesterday, if you heard Edward Cummings when we had a chat to him. She's no certainty to run in a Caulfield Cup, even though she's the outright favourite for the Caulfield Cup, because there is that conjecture about what the weights will be with no realistic top weight. And it has to be a 58 minimum. So if she gets 54.5 or 55 in a Caulfield Cup and they've got to raise the weights a kilo, all of a sudden she doesn't want to get any penalty winning a Caulfield Cup heading into a Melbourne Cup, and she could be headed to the Cox Plate.
Well, and if they're talking Japan Cups as well, how many cup races can you run in if you're still thinking that might be on the radar as well? So I'd love to see her on a Cox Plate. In one of those hard run Cox Plates where they put the foot down. Dewis is the perfect Cox Plate horse for me. So
SMS that came through a little earlier saying, speaking of the Bayeed form line, Regal World would be very hard to beat in a Cox Plate if it came out here. I think it finished about three lengths behind Bayeed a couple of starts ago. That's the Godolphin-trained horse. And you've been speaking to Michael Brown over the last few weeks, and, gee, they would just love to see Real World, who's now into $8, third favourite, off the back of that performance of Bayeed. It's firmed from $11 into $8. Are we likely to see Real World come out for the Cox Plate?
This is how powerful the Bayeed form line is. Even something that gets beaten four lengths behind becomes favourite, just about favourite for the Cox Plate. I spoke to Michael Brown a couple of days ago when we still haven't got the update on State of Rest. So at that point, he was saying, look, our wish list would be Real World and State of Rest. If we can get both of those, even after State of Rest failure, maybe that will put more emphasis on Real World. But the last conversation I had with Michael Brown a couple of days ago was, yeah, we're still hoping to get Real World, but we don't know, water under the bridge scenario.
All right. Locally, all eyes are on the Valley here in Melbourne this weekend. We are a little bit on weather watch, though. What's the likelihood of the track on Saturday being wet?
Well, there's so many combining factors. There is rain predicted, but there's also high winds, as we're experiencing today. So Tony Salisbury, who's stepping in for Marty Simon, who's on a, what do you call junkets when you're being polite? A business trip to Sydney. a trackman gathering. It could be anywhere between a 7 and a 5, depending on rain versus wind. And the rail's going to be at 5 metres, so, we'll have to wait till we get closer to it to work out what's really going on.
All right, we'll see what's happening there. Sarpasan, he's heading up to wine country, lock, full, stock and barrel.
Full-time up to wine country, closing his Flemington stables, where he's been for probably 15 years, Sarpasan. He's got that property up at Tobilk. Of course, the famous vineyard up there is Tobilk Winery, and so he's shutting down Flemington and going full-time up to Tobilk. That's got OB written all over it, hasn't it?
What, from the winery?
Or well, from sales combo, we could do one at each.
Well, it'd be good. He's going well, Sarp. So I know they put a lot of money and a lot of effort into that property up there, so it makes sense that he's going to have the whole establishment there. A couple of quick ones. Alligator blood. This story keeps taking twists and turns, and He could be headed to Dubai. Is that the story?
Yeah, the latest with the interesting Alan Endres is that Dubai is, you know, because you can't, they've given up hope here. They've had a few cracks at Victoria and New South Wales. So the blood may turn up in Dubai. So we'll see what happens with him.
And I know Ray Thomas has written an article in the Sydney papers this morning about the Winks being the first Group 1 of the new racing season. I think the 74 Group 1s. He's saying, and a lot of people say, that we've got too many Group 1s here in Australia, that there should be a remapping of what the Group 1 program here. Obviously, the one issue with that is that we can't get the states together to talk from a point of view of what that would look like. What's your stance on that? And is this maybe a play or a push once again to have the Everest reviewed?
It's interesting that the Everest Group 1 debate has resurrected itself this week. There's usually always something going on behind the scenes when something strategic like that discussion comes into play, whether there's a suggestion that the Racing Australia PRAs are getting closer to getting together, and is this being thrust up as the number one topic. Of course, the reason why the Everest has not been granted Group 1 status is because of the objection from Victoria, who wanted it to be a set date for the Everest so they could work out where it's at compared to Manicados and races like that to give them breathing space. But the desire from New South Wales to have the Everest always 2 weeks from the NRL Grand Final means that it doesn't have a fixed position. So there is an argument for the Everest to be a Group 1, but also the All-Star Mile, but at the moment, for political reasons, that can't be achieved. So, of course, the Everest should be Group 1, but of course, the All-Star Mile should be, and of course, we should all be friends. So,
And realistically, there's a few Group 1s, as you say, that shouldn't actually be Group 1s.
Well, pathway races. The discussion about the Winks, of course, it shouldn't be a Group 1 race. It doesn't matter if every champion that ever lived is running in it this Saturday. It's the same argument as the Memsey and the Orr and the PB Lawrence. All these races that
PB's
are Group 1 or Group 2s, yeah. Whether they should be Group 1s or Group 2s.
What do you do with South Australia? What do you do with WA?
Well, I think every state deserves one, maybe. Like the Goodwood, maybe. The Winterbottom, maybe. Or the Railway Through History and all that. The Stradbroke, probably. But, you know, that's where it ends. Hey,
speaking of ending, do you want to play a little bit of audio of what you think is one of the great stories in South Australia?
Yeah. Have a listen to this and I'll tell you why it's a nice yarn.
4 or 5 to Mulga Lil, Native Blue, Peacemaker, but Trumpster. Oh, Stacey Callow's ridden this like it's the best horse in the race at the 200-metre mark. It's 3 lengths in front. Stacey's staring down the barrel of a treble. She's got it. Trumpster's clear. Big win. Second Exalted Ruth.
Stacey, daughter of Noel, 20-year-old daughter of Noel, who was Victorian-based, and she didn't make the cut in the 2020 intake of apprentices. For whatever reason, they've got to have criteria, and it's got to be reasonably regimented, but not just necessarily with the Victorian system, but or in Stacey's case, but with these sorts of things, maybe there are people who are outliers who don't necessarily tick every single box that, you know, for the perfect little apprentice coming through. Maybe she was a little bit immature. Maybe there were certain things that she didn't do as well as others. Were they the sort of things that really matter if you want to produce a champion little jockey? But she, like Dylan Dunn a few years earlier, who was regarded as too big on the bone density test, I think he went to South Australia, learned the ropes. Stacey's gone over there. At one point, she wanted to study law. Now she's had 20 winners over there in a short period of time. She's doing it really, really well. You know, she's bred to be a jockey. She's only 3'6". And maybe she can get back into Victoria if she wants to. It's tricky for these kids who don't make the cut here because a lot of them, I know there's one who's in South Australia who wants to come back to be with mum and dad. They're only kids. But
well,
because
we saw Jed Stanley have that issue last year. He had to go to WA as well.
Yeah, so maybe the system's not quite perfect. Maybe they have to continually look at the criteria of what makes a candidate.
It's limited the amount of apprentices they can actually take in each year, which makes it difficult.
Yeah, her group, I think there was 9. The current intake, it's 9, 7 and 2. Girls, it'll be just, you won't see a boy in the apprentices school in the future. That's the way it's going. It's such an interesting transition. But good on you, Stace. Well done. 3 winners. Rode one at Port Lincoln the day before. So she's off and running, and South Australia's a really good opportunity for, kids like her. You know, if you can't make the cut here, then you can go there.
Well, and especially the female jockeys that are coming through. Speaking of, just quickly, congrats to Jess Eaton and James Aferis, who got engaged last weekend. And I think there's a congratulations, Jess and James, race at Morphettville on Saturday as well. So you've missed out again, Matty.
Back on the dump heap again. You know.
Read all about it, Matty
Stewart. I'm the perfect physical specimen, ladies.
Yes, finally tuned. We'll take a break. More to come. Let's find out how Very Elegant's going after the break with Aussie Kid.